This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Adam Bryant. Adam's the author of something called The CEO Test and has had a brilliant career both in business and in coaching and leading people. And we're going to talk to him about strategy and business today and some of his thoughts for leaders. Adam, I know I did a poor job of introducing you. Can you help me do a better job of introducing yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. Quick bio. So I'm currently working for an executive mentoring and leadership development firm called Merrick & Company, but I spent 30 years as a journalist, 18 years at the New York Times, and kind of got into the leadership space with a feature I started in 2009 as a side project at the Times called Corner Office, which was based on a very simple what if, which is what if I sat down with CEOs and never asked them a single question about their companies, and instead just asked them about kind of leadership lessons they've learned over the course of their lives and how they learned them and how they think about culture and teams and hiring and talent, these sort of timeless universal themes of leadership. And that started me on this great journey. I've interviewed more than 600 leaders by now. I've been teaching leadership and started, just finished my third book, The CEO Test, which really, in many ways sort of identifies the patterns and themes that just emerge organically from all my interviews.
And I want to come back to the book in a second. Before we do that, one of the things you talk about in leadership is this concept of simplifying strategy and simplifying strategy in an increasingly complex world. And there's probably not that many more valuable skills than this ability to simplify. Can you talk about that and why that's so important?
Sure. And I'll start with the fact that it is a challenge for a lot of leaders and a lot of companies. And part of the insight for me, look, as I said, I was a journalist. I didn't go to business school. But as I've worked more inside big companies and worked with leadership teams, it becomes increasingly clear to me just that the simple word strategy is kind of a Rorschach test or ink blot test, if you will. It means different things to different people. And often, as you know, Scott, there's this kind of bias in the business world to make things more complicated than they often need to be. And also there's this phenomenon where something might be clear, in a leader's head, and they think it's clear to everybody else, when in fact it isn't. I mean, you look at a lot of strategy slides that CEOs present to all their employees, and often they're like 7 bullet points on the right-hand side, and on the left-hand side there's like a tiered colored pyramid with a some corkscrew arrows and all that, and it may make sense in the moment, but it's simply too complicated because all the neuroscience shows that most of us can't remember more than 3 or 4 things day to day. And so it really is this discipline. And it is this about the recognition that it has to be simple. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a leader's job to stand up in front of all their employees and answer the kind of questions that little kids ask in the back seat, right? Like, where are we going? How are we going to get there? And there's got to be that sort of simple answer to it. We share this framework that I heard from a CEO named Dinesh Paliwal, who ran Harman International. It's a 4-part framework that really crystallizes strategy and in many ways creates this kind of discipline or forcing function, if you will, to relentlessly simplify the strategy. And, again, it is a habit of mind and it's one of the things that has to be worked at, but it's really about getting to the essence of something. And even if you've got, your list of 12 things down to 6 things, know that you still have work to do rather than stopping and high-fiving yourself.
No, I think that's magnificent. And obviously a key to a great journalistic career, writing career, is being able to get to the essence of things as well and be able to clarify, what's the real point of whatever discussion you're having, whatever you're reporting or writing on. And so you've done this brilliant transition in your career multiple different places. Take a moment and talk about the book, The CEO Test, and about your other books as well, if you don't mind.
Sure. So with The CEO Test, the new book, I have a co-author named Kevin Scher, who's the former CEO of Amgen, and for 12 years built that company from $1 billion to $16 billion in organic growth in terms of annual revenue. He's been on boards, taught leadership at Harvard. Has this incredible depth. He was one of the first CEOs I interviewed for Corner Office, and we stayed in touch. So, part of the point of the book is to
The question there, Adam, is he is this magnificent CEO. Amgen did unbelievably well during his tenure. Unbelievable success story. you say that you're the co-authors of the book. You're a writer, you're a journalist. Now, tell me, is it fair to call you co-authors, or you do 98% of the writing and he's a co-author because he has lots of substance and content? I mean, do you really give him credit as a co-author?
I give him full credit, and this was a true partnership in every sense of the word. I mean, I do think of it as sort of the metaphorical tea, where I brought to the table the breadth of my 600 plus interviews, and he brought to the table the depth of his experience as a leader. And he himself has been involved in more than 20 CEO successions over the years. And while I did take the lead on writing the book, you know, readers will discover that Kevin plays this kind of player coach role within the pages, where some of the key lessons that he learned, frankly, sometimes painful lessons that he learned, provide anchor anecdotes for some of the chapters. So, you know, I couldn't have done this without him. And I think he'd say the same thing about me and, you know, to me, which is a sign of a true partnership. So that's a little bit of the background. Once we had our partnership, we spent a lot of time in front of a whiteboard, really trying to figure out what questions we wanted to answer in this book, because there are so many leadership books out there, right? What could we add to the conversation? And it really came down to this focus that's captured in the subtitle, which is master the challenges that make or break all leaders. So why do leaders succeed or fail in these roles? And even though the book is called the CEO test, we really wanted to say, like, what are the tests for all leaders, whether they're leading a team of 10 people or 500,000 as a CEO, and then flip the question and say, okay, so once we identify those challenges, what can we learn from CEOs about how to do those well? So it was really about creating an incredibly practical playbook based on stories, insights, and takeaways from these leaders on how to do the job of leadership. It's not an academic or philosophical treatise on what is leadership. We're not providing theoretical frameworks. This is what practitioners of the art do so others can do it well. And, you know, in the winnowing process of that whiteboard exercise, we identified the seven challenges, which were, you know, creating that strategy, building a high-performing culture, building teams that are true teams, really understanding how to listen as a leader, driving transformation, navigating a crisis. And then the last chapter shifts in focus from what you need to do as a leader to how you need to be as a leader. And we call that how to master the inner game of leadership. And that's more just like, how as a leader do you deal with all the sort of second guessing and relentless, you know, challenges that you face every minute? So that's a quick overview of the book.
And let me ask you another question. There's been this massive change in sort of who owns companies in America and the world, really, over the last couple decades. At one point, Kevin would have been the quintessential Fortune 500 company CEO, and he still would be, for sure. Today, so many companies are owned by financial sponsors, private equity sponsors that have a very, you know, large role and ownership in the company. At the end of the day, that doesn't have any impact ultimately what kind of leader someone should be, but it does impact a little bit things, because now you're really responding to one board, one primary investor. Any thoughts on what you've seen over the years as private equity is taking a bigger and bigger role in corporate America and so forth?
Yeah, I think private equity is part of it, and we could talk about this for hours, Scott, but I do think this moment that we are living through right now is just this incredible moment of transformation of kind of the role of corporations in American society. I mean, with Me Too, Black Lives Matter, the pandemic we've all been through, you know, there's this long-running debate is like, is it shareholder capitalism like it used to be, or are we moving to stakeholder capitalism? And I argue that debate is fully over. And so for the role of CEOs, you know, they have to be chief diversity officers, chief ESG officers. I think companies are increasingly operating like democracies, in which every employee feels like they have a vote and say in the company's policies, who they do business with. We're seeing this unionization movement at Google and elsewhere. And it is remarkable what's happening, because I think a lot of society's challenges are rolling past the front door of government agencies and rolling up to the front door of companies to solve. And so I completely agree with you. I mean, Kevin would be the first to admit that the challenge of being a CEO today is exponentially harder than it was when he was CEO. But now he's mentoring a lot of CEOs in these global multinational corporations. So he's got a sense of the challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you a follow-up question to that. If you talk to CEOs literally 15 months ago, they would have had a course ready that says, we have to be the very best in this, one or two in our market in this. We have to build a great team. We've got to be magnificent. One of our core companies has to be growing sales or growing whatever it is. If you're a software as a service company, we have to be great at sales. We have to be great at constantly evolving our products. Whatever the company might be, there were core missions and core strategies. Now, if you go forward a year, strategies change so much for CEOs because on top of those core missions, it has to be. We've got to be taking much more attention to, we've got to be magnificent virtual and technologically in a way we didn't have to be a year or 2 years ago. Maybe we should have been, but now it's clear you have to be. And second, we've got to be front and center on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that, you know, that almost becomes a top 3 to 5 core mission of companies today. Whereas, you know, 2 years ago, it was in some companies, but certainly by and large, it didn't get nearly the top line billing that it got today. Is that a fair sense from you as how strategy is changing and how these things now come into being a key part of strategy, or how do you look at that?
Yeah, completely agree with you. I mean, the pandemic has just been such an incredible test of leadership, right? And you know, you sort of step back, the last crisis that leaders had to navigate was 2008, the financial crisis, in the sense of like a crisis that affected everybody. And in that 12-year period, I mean, the world was a pretty stable place and you could plan out your spreadsheets for the next 5 years. But what we have heard from, you know, I've been doing a lot of interviews with leaders during the crisis, and everybody talked about the idea of like, can you embrace ambiguity? But it was a little bit theoretical, but this has been a test in that. And what is so clear is that some people really thrive in that environment of a crisis where the answer isn't clear. And often it's not necessarily who you think will show up well. I mean, a lot of leaders have told me that they've completely sort of re-ranked their leadership team and who's the real stars based on how this has played out in the crisis. And what this has just required, all these sort of new muscles for leaders. I mean, not just sort of humanity and compassion for everything that everybody's going through, but just how do you lead in a fog when you can't plan, you know, 12 months, 3 years in advance like you used to? And it requires a nimbleness. You have to rethink sort of incentive pay and how you reward people. But it is that ability. I mean, I think all CEOs are kind of becoming like tech CEOs, right? Because to be a CEO in Silicon Valley, you are always leading in the fog, right? The product cycles move really fast. There's such quick disruption. And so how do you create that environment where you can respond in a pretty nimble way to all the disruption? Because disruption is a constant now, right? Even though we're getting on the other side of this pandemic, we know that there's going to be another crisis.
100%. And it is fascinating to see these different leadership behavioral qualities, like true authenticity and compassion, become so much more front and center than they were, you know, 30 years ago when maybe you or I grew up in business and top-down leadership was a thing. And now it's really a very different world in terms of everybody having a vote and compassion and how you deal with people being so important to long-term success and being able to maintain a following at a company. If you don't maintain a following at a company, not like a Twitter following, but a following, a real following of people that want to work with you and work for the company, you really can't do anything effectively without that following. And people are very clear about believing they've got a leader that cares about everybody versus just themselves today in a way that they're much more focused on today than they were 30 years ago. It's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think the era of command and control leadership is officially dead. I mean, in this environment, any leader who sits at the head of the table and pretends they have all the answers, they're just going to lose credibility instantly. So it really takes, you have to be grounded and secure as the leader to be able to say, look, we're facing this challenge. What does everybody think? You know, I love that expression that the smartest person in the room is the room, just this, you know, sense that collectively we will come up with the answer, but not every leader is up to that challenge.
It is a complex balance because at the end of the day, you have to know what the room is thinking. You've got to get ideas through and so forth. And ultimately, someone does have to decide where you're going, what the strategy is, what the plan is. And it could be consensus driven, but it's a fascinating balance for leaders of enough directiveness versus empathy and inclusionness and everything. It's a fascinating mix of quality that makes a great leader today, and can't lose sight of also trying to move an organization forward too to meet its strategic goals and ambitions. Anyways, Adam, it's an absolute pleasure to visit with you. Brilliant what you've done over the course of your career. Tell us how people can learn more about you or find the book, The CEO Test. Give us sort of direction where people can learn more about you.
Sure. My personal website is adambryantbooks, all one word, .com. And if you're interested in the book, just if you Google my name, Adam Bryant, and The CEO Test, it'll come up from various bookseller websites.
I would ask you how you came up with the name of the website, but that would be an immature question. Yeah, I want to thank you for joining us today. Just a great pleasure to visit with you. It's really brilliant what you and Kevin have done and what you've done over the course of your career. Loved visiting with you. Thank you for joining the Backroads Private Equity Podcast today.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.